Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
To declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Beard here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. In the first half of the show, we had Mel Kay on from Hollywood. Has her own show now. We've talked to her. It's like the third interview that we've done with her, even before she became, you know, a breakout. And it's an interesting conversation. We're going to be having more with her, I'm sure. Now, and certainly before the election, so that's something to look forward to. Now, we only had a limited time, so for the second part of the show, we just started our interview this week with James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com. Corbett has been a very great analysis of history and the people involved and the families and the continuation of their agenda. And it definitely segues with what Mel Kay was saying. Now, the thing is different this evening. You start to hear James a little bit of activism. He's starting to talk about ideas that he has that maybe there's some things we can do with this knowledge that we have. Kind of caught him on him. Go, ooh, sounds like you're becoming an activist a little bit. You want to do a little something activism? You know, what can we do? Well, we'll let him explain some of the ideas that he's had. Because James is so worthy, I'm willing to enact any one of, you know, his favorite ideas. Maybe we can do something. But, you know, I'm kind of at the time to where we're going to start trying to survive and thrive in what's coming. Well, enjoy the conversation for the rest of the evening with James Corbett.
All right, so part of my Solutions Watch exploration of different ideas, I threw out on the table the idea of lawsuits, and specifically this was because last month I saw an article about a group of people who were suing the National Park Service because they had been denied the ability to pay entry fee to whichever park it was, but with cash. Mm-hmm. And their lawsuit is saying, well, as last time I checked, the legal tender law was that this currency is supposed to be acceptable for any debt, right? So why can't we use this? So they're taking the National Park Service to court, or are they suing the state, or how does that work? Anyway, they're suing someone about this. And so once I saw that particular article, it's one of those things where pattern recognition or whatever it is, I started seeing that everywhere. Oh, this lawsuit, this lawsuit, this lawsuit, this lawsuit. So I just decided to throw it out there on the table for my community to have a discussion. Do you guys think this is a way forward? I understand that 99.9% of my audience is going to be immediately cynical about this as a potential idea because it's a bottom-paid-for controlled court system in which you're invoking state force to come in and enforce these rules that they make up themselves and blah, blah, blah. Look, I get it. But The whole this is the point of Solutions Watch that I think continually gets lost and makes me wonder if it's worth doing it at all, is the point of Solutions Watch isn't, hey, guys, here's this thing that will completely change and wonderfully transform the world for the better overnight, and here it is, and if it doesn't work, then everything's... No, my whole point of Solutions Watch is, here's all these buttons, and there's a million of them, and you get to choose what buttons you're going to push, and they might do something that improves your life just a little bit. And is that worth pushing that button, even knowing that that button exists, or is it just, no, not until there's a perfect solution for everything? So anyway, the response that I've received so far is overwhelmingly, this is stupid, don't, it's a waste of time, it's not going to do anything.
I have an opinion. The I saw, it was just a couple of days ago, they had some Brazilian, ICW, whatever, the fighters in the rings, they try to really kick the crap out of each other, what I see, whatever it is. So Joe Rogan is doing the after bout interview, and he goes up to this guy from Brazil, and he goes, read Ludwig von Mises, MFers! I mean, he's just going, so my point is that when it penetrates society, when it's general public opinion, when people start seeing, culturally and icons and people and just ideas start to surface, slogans, different attitudes, that kind of thing, that's what you're really going for, okay? Yep. And I've had over a dozen lawsuits. I've been argued before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as my own attorney. I've been through, I meat grind in Arizona Supreme Court 3 times. I mean, I get it. And every single benefit from them came because you got a government number. Because the government number is a starting pistol for the media and these guys to, write about it, So they write about it, it's discussed in the legislature, people take sides in the media or something. Well, which they're trying to control, and then it became alt media. And so these things get attention.
Yep.
But even better is it very clearly well defines the issue. And some attorneys and efforts go for, the headline, Trump bad, so we're suing him because he, whatever, So, but some of them are very informative and they're on a specific issue. Some some government inaction, some
even informing people what the law actually is.
Yeah, make them say it.
Right?
Make them make them say it. And the lawsuits is my make them say it. So it has, in the long run, because I've been doing this for a while, almost 40 years, and in the long run, what happens is that you see the shift in attitudes based on the information that people received. This is why I'm so supportive of Corbett and his videos and his context. Because if you don't have the context, you have to learn context over decades. If you know the context already going in by watching, 5, 6, 7, 8, 20, whatever, of, James's best videos, then you have the context and you can see it. And you can make decisions, informed, up-to-date decisions on what's going to be the biggest
truth
mile marker about in this history.
Truth isn't a set of factual statements. It's a set of factual statements arranged in a way that makes sense of the world. And that is the context. So you can have factual statements reported by the establishment media, but there are factual statements here and there and here and there, and they never put it together in a way that actually explains what's happening. I would say that the other important part of that Solutions Watch that we're talking about, suing the tyrants, is what I got towards the end of the video, where I'm talking about, rather than suing the state or the governments, using notice of liability as a specific legal instrument to put on blast specific individuals, saying, no, if you come after me, even if you are wearing whatever funny hat you're wearing or whatever badge, you personally, Joe Smith, you're going to be responsible for the harm that is done on this, which I think is probably potentially an effective method for getting particular people to back off in particular circumstances, which again is not some great victory for all time, but could
I
presumably be used.
I've seen it done. I try and get away from individuals because they really rally around their made men and women. I mean, you know, but if it's an issue thing and it's a, you're going after the shiny badge or the position or something like that, but then honestly,
when you make it personal, that's when it becomes dangerous.
You wind up Hillary'd and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. And here was McCain. I mean, it was just, you know, a thing. So if you go after people, generally, they always claim sovereign immunity. And then you got to battle that, you know. So if you name them individually, that's the first thing. You got to be ready for that. So oftentimes, it's if the goal was sovereign immunity, okay, which is what you really have to attack. So if I was to do it, you know, I'd be going after get a really good case, and that you knew they were going to claim sovereign immunity, and be ready to argue that. You know, so that they aren't held not liable for anything ever. You got to really get them in acting out of a color authority of law that they knew they were out doing something, and they get stripped of that immunity and you go after them. But it's but as long as they're the club, then they can do club you any way they want.
Yep. But also not even in the context of suing people in particular, but using notice of liability as a way of saying that, you know, if you are the doctor that's going to deliver me this shot, you're just sign this document that shows that you are on the record saying that you agree that this is a safe method and you've looked into all of the defects of this shot and you're going to sign this piece of paper, right? Putting them on notice that they are going to be legally responsible for what happens.
Well, the pressure's off me now because there's people doing it here right now. Mickey Kahn, I think it is. They're really going after this liability thing for individuals and stripping this fund. So I'm looking forward to see where that goes. I'm thinking that there's a bigger solution in being out of their control. You know, if you're not, they want you in control. And if you're out of control, then you're out of control. And I think that's the goal.
Well, agreed. And it raises other points, as some people in the comments were bringing up. There was a self-professed voluntarist who was talking in the comments about how using the judicial system is against voluntarism and anarchist principles. But I'm wondering, so you think an anarchist world is one in which there's no courts, no judges? Really? I think there would be, in fact. I think common law would be, actually, of course, everything would be adjudicated, but it would be adjudicated on principles of voluntary participation.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, but that doesn't mean I support what this crap is now, you know?
Exactly, of course, it's the state justice system, right?
This, you know, I'm glad you're starting to really think harder about this stuff, you know, that you're starting to become an activist, James, and I can feel it, you know? You're kind of, you know, wanting some action. What do you think would be James's version? If everybody gave me 5 minutes and $5 of their time and we'd go whip ass doing something, is it be in the center of decentralized ideas or what?
Yeah. No, my whole raison d'etre, my whole existence is geared towards human freedom and whatever makes that possible. But as part of that, I can't perform the performative contradiction of telling people what they should or shouldn't be doing. The entire point of freedom is your ability to decide for yourself in your own circumstances what works for you and what doesn't. And having the ability to do that so long as you're not infringing on other people. That is the universal principle. If I had my 5-minute speech to make, it would be garnered towards that. And I wouldn't be telling anyone what to do or what not to do with their lives.
As people start to embrace that and they start to, you know, own their own freedom and their ability to, you're free to, like, move their hand. They're not encumbered. I mean, they can do it. You might not be at liberty to do it, you know, but you can do it. And to get them to get off their butt and actually do it, is that a psychological thing, a physical thing, a practical thing, or something that, you know, changes people to want to change a little bit? You know, to do something road.
It's exactly. It is such a mindset thing, isn't it? It's all about your mindset. And the interesting thing is we tend to think that we set our mindset or something along those lines. We are in control of what we think and what we believe and the way that we're oriented. But that's not necessarily, at least not the entire story. And there may be something to it. You hear about these studies and things that are done on people that where they are able to because of, you know, wire implants in someone's brain, they're able to make them move their arm or something. And when you ask someone who is doing this, like, oh, why did you move your arm? They will come up with the justification after the fact. Oh, I was feeling uncomfortable, so I decided to move my arm. No, we made you move your arm. And I think there may be something to that, in that if people actually just practiced the act of declaring and living their freedom, even if they didn't believe it, at a certain point, they start creating that narrative in
make
their
it
head.
You make it.
And I think the action is actually, it maybe the cause, but certainly the more important part of the equation, rather than intellectualizing it.
I am encouraged by just crazy things, off the wall things, things that you wouldn't think, you know, would, you know, be, you know, that big a deal to me. And it was, here in, at Midfest, it's the springtime. They do it in October when the leaves start to go, so it's cool and crisp and you're starting to see the colors. Then in spring, it's green, it's coming, and freaking pollen everywhere, man, kicking my butt. So then, we got to get some honey of this, whatever. So Donna gets this. I want to do a commercial for Hilltop Garden, whatever the heck, honey. This stuff is honey, like maple syrup and butter. It is just the most amazing. I want to endorse. I want to buy into. I want. And the thing is that to have the where you have a local supply of something that you use on a regular basis that you would enjoy, be proud of. Maybe it trades, you know, in other communities, that kind of thing. You want to encourage that because this is what you want to be attached to. Something like this.
Yep.
You know what I mean? This is my favorite. Oh my God, this is going to make me look good, you know, or, and of course it'll benefit them or something. That's the free market. That's the future. That's the abundance that I'm thinking of. That's what's coming. Yep. Then we went to a ranch. It was just a few miles away. A couple of guys were there, and I interviewed one of them. It was a guy on Twitter, finance college guy, Wall Street, where the heck he was. And he on Twitter, and he goes, you know, we could buy shares into cows and whatever and get land and kind of poof. It's a couple of years later, and for the last year, they've been on 700 acres, got like 300 cows, and people out there volunteering and part of their shares and working and making food supply so people don't go hungry. And the one thing that I got from him talking to him is he was more about the responsibility we have to others. You know, it's a kind of a biblical and Christian thing.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, think you're just going to go out and be, even if you got your own community or whatever. It was, to him, he made a persuading case for the benefit to yourself and humanity as a species, as being the social creatures that we are, that you accommodate a little bit of sacrifice to, you know, help your brother along kind of thing. And it was a very powerful message, and he did a really good job at it. And I'm going to be checking back with these guys and, you know, see how they're doing and so on. But I'm seeing this shift, and I don't know how it goes in Japan. You know, America, is that kind of the bellwether for the world? Is it Europe? Is it Asia? Does Japan kind of just, you know, muddle along and not influenced? Or how do you get a bead on what's changing worldwide other than the headlines?
Good question. Before I answer that, let me just tag on to what you're saying there about this being oriented towards service to others. That is actually a more important part of this equation than a lot of people would realize. Maybe people don't know this, but clinically speaking, there is no distinguishable actual internal psychological difference between thinking and concentrating on yourself and depression. Those are indistinguishable states because people who are thinking about themselves find themselves in depression. People who are oriented towards others are happier and more productive and less likely to be in a state of depression, etc. So that again, even if you're only thinking about your own self-interest, it's in your self-interest to be in other people's interest. And that is the beauty of the free market. It compels people to be of service to others. Again, even if only for your own sake, for the sake of yourself and your family, you need to be of use to other people. And that's a wonderful, great thing for society, isn't it? And so we need to be oriented more towards celebrating what is good. Hey, you know, there's this local mom and pop that are creating this wonderful honey. There's, you know, there's this thing in my local community. Hey, I think this is great. We should be more about celebrating things that are good and working towards building up things that are good rather than denouncing things that are bad and working to destroy the things that are bad. But that is the wrong orientation altogether. Having said that,
honey, syrup, butter. Imagine that. I mean, come on.
I'm trying.
What is this? It's like when you put a bunch of butter on a waffle and then get some good maple syrup and you put, you know, it's kind of, it's like, wow. So it just excited me when, you know, I experienced that. When Donna went and got this, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It was because it was representative of what we're missing. You know, we're missing that craftsmanship. And I remember I had, Gerald Celente on years ago. He was just, he hammers on this all the time. Back then, that's when he started, man. He was going for it. It's going to be local. It's going to be quality. It's going to be wooden toys, you know, carved out for little kids. I mean, it's going to be whatever. And I don't think he was advocating that, you know, you have to do it. I think it was just going to happen. You know, here it comes. And I can see it, and I think it's a good sign. It means we're going to be okay, but a lot of people aren't. What's our responsibility to them, James?
Our responsibility is to make our community and surroundings as good as we can make it. That, again, will boil down to every single person is going to have their own ability to do that in their own ways, given whatever talents and skills that they have. The real question then becomes, how do we foster the right types of skills and because, I mean, trades and skills and physical learning how to carve a wooden toy, etc., is not, generally speaking, something that's encouraged in our modern society, but maybe it should be. And on that note, I'm sure you've seen the stories saying that Gen Z is apparently taking up trades at much higher percentages and ratios than in previous generations, and that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Are you going to put yourself into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to go to some state indoctrination camp in order to get a fancy degree that will entitle you to flip burgers or until the robots replace you? Or will you learn an actual valuable skill in trade and apprentice on the job and then get more money and actually have a useful skill? It seems like a no-brainer. And that's why I think we need to be orienting people towards the things that can actually be useful and implemented in a healthy, thriving society rather than just baking ourselves into cogs in the wheel, because we are going to be replaceable cogs in the very near future if we keep going down that path.
This Wallace, he doesn't even have a knighthood, but he fights with passion. And he inspires.
And you wish to charge off and fight as he did, eh? So would I, eh?
Well, maybe it's time.
It is time to survive. You're the 17th Robert Bruce. The 16 before you passed you land and title because they didn't charge in. Call a meeting of the nobles.
But they do nothing but talk.
Rightly so. They're as rich in English titles and lands as they are in Scottish, just as we are. You admire this man, this William Wallace. Uncompromising men are easier to admire. His courage, so does a dog. But it is exactly the ability to compromise that makes a man noble. And understand this. Edward Longshanks is the most ruthless king ever to sit on the throne of England. And none of us, and nothing of Scotland will remain unless we are ruthless. Give ear to our nobles. Knowing their minds is the key to the throne.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline. airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
USA News Update. President Biden reassures Ukrainian President Zelensky of quick military aid as the Senate prepares to pass a foreign aid package, including military assistance for Ukraine. During a call Monday, Biden reaffirmed the U.S.'s commitment to supporting Ukraine against Russian aggression. Former President Trump's hush money trial is over for Monday. Prosecutors accused him of falsifying records to hide payments to Stormy Daniels in 2016. Trump's defense denies any scheme, claiming Daniels tried to profit from false allegations, owing Trump $600,000 from failed lawsuits. The first witness, David Packer, was called, but the trial was halted due to the Passover holiday. Kroger and Albertsons are selling an additional 166 stores as part of efforts to address regulatory concerns over their proposed $25 billion merger. This move aims to mitigate fears of increased prices and job losses. John Schaefer, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Or Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, on the Free Talk Live Network on Genesis. We're finishing up our conversation with James Corbett. Sounds to me like he's turned into a little bit of activist, wants to do something, wants to go get some on the man. That is to be encouraged, and I will do my best. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, keep pinging on that a little bit with James as we talk to him regularly over the months and years to come. And it's a sign. You know, it's a sign. There's a shift coming. Go to freedomsphoenix.com and you'll know why. More. James Corbett right now.
Our responsibility is to make our community and surroundings as good as we can make it. That, again, will boil down to every single person is going to have their own ability to do that in their own ways, given whatever talents and skills that they have. The real question then becomes, how do we foster the right types of skills and because, I mean, trades and skills and physical learning how to carve a wooden toy, etc., is not generally speaking, something that's encouraged in our modern society, but maybe it should be. And on that note, I'm sure you've seen the stories saying that Gen Z is apparently taking up trades at much higher percentages and ratios than in previous generations, and that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Are you going to put yourself into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to go to some state indoctrination camp in order to get a fancy degree that will entitle you to flip burgers or until the robots replace you? Or will you learn an actual valuable skill and trade and apprentice on the job and then get more money and actually have a useful skill? It seems like a no-brainer. And that's why I think we need to be orienting people towards the things that can actually be useful and implemented in a healthy, thriving society, rather than just baking ourselves into cogs in the wheel, because we are going to be replaceable cogs in the very near future if we keep going down that path.
And Myron in the negative, you know, I'm just... I remember Will Gregg, you know, he had spoken at our Freedom Summits. You know, he's was a great writer. But he was always so negative. I mean, it was like the police state MFers need to die, you know. And it was, and he got kicked out of the John Birch, was it New American he used to write for or something. And then he started, right, they started the Libertarian Institute with Scott Horton. And I really liked the guy. Big family he took care of, and but I just think when he died of natural causes. But when he died, you know, was it did he have regret? Was he satisfied? Did he think he fought the good fight? He did the right thing by, you know, showing these guys for what they were—the BATF and the federal government and the FBI and Department of Justice. I mean, he just hammered on them, accurate as hell, which is why they didn't like him, you know. But the I don't know if I would feel good about my end as what light did I shed. And I know a lot of people thought his stuff was really popular. I mean, he was a really popular writer. And I asked him, could he write me a positive story to put in the magazine? And he goes, no, I can't, you know. And I was going, that was kind of sad to me, you know, for some reason. I just
honestly, I hear you. In fact, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this today, and I don't even know why, but I was thinking about Alan Watt. Do you remember Alan Watt? Not Alan Watts. Alan Watt. He was a Canadian, well, a Scot, but he was living in Canada, who did a broadcast on RBN, I think, a decade ago or so, called Cutting Through the Matrix. And I remember when I was first getting into independent media and stuff, I was listening to Alex Jones, I was listening to Alan Watt, people like that. And I remember at a certain point, and this wasn't very far in, like maybe a year or so of listening to Alan Watt, I came to the conscious realization, oh, this guy only ever talks about the worst possible aspect of everything. That this is an agenda that's been going on since long before you were born. It'll continue long after you die. You can't change any of it. You can't talk to the normies about this because they'll just come after you. So you just have to smile politely and talk about the weather and then go home with your private thoughts. And that was his message, ultimately, at the end of the day, every time. And at a certain point, I thought, why am I even listening to this? What is the point of this? This is just horribly depressing and absolutely not empowering in any way, shape, or form. So I stopped listening to him. And I think that is my mindset. If I truly, at the bottom of my soul, believe there's nothing you can do, it's all foreordained, I wouldn't be here doing this right now. I wouldn't be talking to you. I don't know why anyone would listen to me if that was my message. What would be the point of that? So, yeah, I hear you very, very much on that. If people don't have some positive message that they can put forward, I think there's no point in investing your time in that.
It's going to be hard to inspire Generation Next with that. And I think that's what's happened. You know, they've been scared to death of every freaking thing under the sun, you know, including the sun. And it just, it's amazing that we have as much toxic masculinity as we got. And I'm seeing it's going to be a marketing thing. It's going to be cool again. It's going to be, okay, we didn't need to have the jock rule the school when all these computer nerds were coming up and really they were ruling the planet, you know. But, you know, can we have, you know, some guys that can lay some brick? I mean, can you teach your son what a hammer is? I mean, can you? I mean, to be productive and able to fend for yourself when you don't have everything done for you by Rosie the Robot, which is common. You know, my God, I don't know what we're going to do with that. What do you think that? How's that going to affect potential society? Is it? I mean, in the long run, humanity always thrives because it does, hopefully. But with this AI robot thing, man, what do you think?
Well, this is where I am potentially black-pilled on some of this sort of stuff, because as I've always said, and I continue to say, as long as the human spirit survives and thrives, humanity will prevail in the end. And whatever dark times we go through, free humanity always reemerges. It's like the beef ball, you can't push it down, and if you do, it'll pop back up. Unless and until humanity, that fundamental dynamic, changes. And I think we are heading into the technological space where the Matrix or something like it is on its way. What do you do at that point? That really does change the game. And I know that people like to poo-poo the AI and automation and robots and all this. They talked about that sort of stuff. They'll put the horse and buggy makers out of business, but that just means you got a car industry.
No, this is different.
This is different. And honestly, I feel this because I am sitting here with my daughter and my son. Every single day, I don't think there's a day that goes by I don't get to say something about, you want to be a truck driver when you grow up, son? Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I don't think there will be truck drivers when you grow up. I mean, there's very, very little that I can think of where, don't worry, you'll be able to do that. And no, probably the robots will do it.
Yeah, I'll be president. Can't be president someday.
I hope the robots will do that.
I'm sure I told you this before. A friend of mine, we had a story. They did comment on one of the stories we had, and it said something like 80% of government workers can be replaced with robots. And he just right back, and he goes, 100% of government jobs could be replaced with pictures of robots. And I thought that was, okay, that's a good way of looking at it. But I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. You know, there's going to be the robot in there, and it's going to have its official, this is the answer to whatever, and don't call again.
They've already created the AI religion where they're literally worshiping the AI godhead, and we haven't even seen anything.
They got a logo
yet.
And everything?
Yeah, probably.
They need a savior. They got to kill some AI, you know?
Yeah. The dead and risen AI.
Right. You can't do it. It's blockchain. You can't stop it. It's really why I like talking to you, because it's of all the technical and the details and so on, I could throw up 50 gazillion stories, and it's just really always comes down to humanity. It always comes down to individual anarchical decisions that you make and what you perceive to be your own self-interest. If we can learn through context and seeing facts and analyzing our situations and so on, and just talking to family and friends and having meet space and community, and hug on them and, swap auras, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
You can recognize this stuff. You have less need for government to be the source of the problems to begin with. So it's a person thing. It's a human thing. And I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to have to be, I think, blood and steel and a bunch of dead humans. And I fear that. And I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to kill or be killed. But I don't want to be left alone. I'll put that in there. I'm thinking we're going to have to go through something. How likely do you think we got to go through something?
What does that thing look like on this side and during and on the other side? Okay, here's the question. Did you ever read Dune? Not watch the movies, read the book.
Me?
Yeah.
I used to read a lot until I got, married after I started having kids. But it was mostly science fiction.
Dune?
I'm sorry?
Did you read Dune?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So I read that 25 years ago or something. It really left an impact on me at the time. It was an interesting book, right? There's a lot of philosophy and sort of deeper themes.
I read it right when the movie came out. Yeah, that's what caused me to.
As in the David Lynch.
Yeah, the old one. So
back
in the day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did his best. Huh? Anyway, part of the lore of the book, which is interesting. I always thought it was just audacious to set a science fiction piece, not just a couple decades in the future, not just 100 years, but this is tens of thousands of years in the future. So how on earth is humanity going to evolve? And so part of the lore of this is that there are no thinking machines. There are no computers that are like computers that we have or anything that corresponds to that. Specifically because in the lore of the Dune universe, they went through the Butlerian Jihad. Look it up, read the wiki fandom articles about this. The idea is that at some point the AI, whatever, robots were taking over humanity, and they eventually had to fight some kind of big, you know, war against that, and instituted the rule, which has become almost like this religious maxim by the time we get to the Dune series, that you do not make computers or artificial intelligence in the mold of a human. There is no thinking. So they develop the Mentats who can, you know, do these incredible calculations in their head organically.
And lip or something, and they...
Yeah, right. And they've got...
Computers.
They use the spice melange to help them and blah, 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 whatever, right? But the point is that there is that understanding that even a calculator is a step on that path towards the inevitable takeover of humanity by the artificial intelligence, which of course isn't real intelligence. And we have to understand that. Yes, it is able to do calculations and to put information together in much more rapidly than any human ever could, even at this point, let alone, let's imagine, 10, 20, 100, 1,000 years down the road. But the point is, intelligence is not that. In the exact same way that we just established that a set of facts is not the truth, the set of facts put together in a narrative that makes sense of the world is the truth. And that, until we get that past that distinction, which is, I think, part of that that wrong path that that humanity has taken the past few hundred years, the Enlightenment idea that it's all, oh, we've dispensed with all those old fairy tales, and now we're perfectly rational, and we have the scientific method, and blah, blah, blah. And where does that lead us? It leads us to, you know, men can be women can be men, and whatever, everything. Black is white, and white is black, and everything is permissible, and all of this nonsense, contradictory nonsense, because we have lost the fundamental compass of that overarching narrative that puts us in the context of who we are as humans and what this all means. And that is real intelligence, to understand the mythology and fairy tales and all of that people would dismiss in the Enlightenment mold is actually an incredibly important part of that. And that's what will be excluded from the robot AI thinking machine takeover. And I think that's what Frank Herbert saw and he was gesturing towards and incorporated nicely. So I think ultimately we do need our Butlerian Jihad. How are we going to get there? What does that look like? How far down that road do we have to get before we start pushing back against it? And how many people have to die when that happens? That's the question.
Well, I didn't get far enough into the future because Dune was a bunch of, I just read the first one. You know? And it was a lot of this you're talking about came later, you know, as I remember, but
earlier, but yeah.
Okay. But I'm not familiar with a lot of that.
In a different book. Yeah.
But the main thing that I'm seeing from, I got a lot of science fiction in me, you know, cause I enjoyed that more. It was like different ideas that Winder, you know, it's Heinlein, Hogan and, you know, and Asimov. And so, I mean, it was just expand your mind. And then, you know, and Neil Smith, you know, the one thing is how much of it has come true. The only thing is like transporters, and I'm, you know, we'll see, and warp drive, which we'll see, you know, replicators, you know, you might as well 3D print equipment.
Well, we got 3D printers now. We're getting towards
so, you know, it's just, it's been steps in that direction, you know, and it hasn't been fast enough for me. But the idea of abundance, that was one thing what robotics and AI and so on has brought. But they have to have a self-interest to give a crap whether it's abundance for you and abundance for them.
Yeah.
And how close do you want them to get? Do you want them to have ambition? I mean, I can get metastasized into God knows what. Oh, to serve man. It's a cookbook. I fear it in that way is that they're going to give it too much credit, too much control, too much, because I don't expect it to not act in its own self-interest. And if as it gets smarter, and if it sees us as a threat to that, and we treat people, them, as bad as we treat people, they're like, we're a freaking plague on the planet, and you need to all die. We're Terminator.
Yeah.
So I see that as a legitimate threat.
Well, you know, this goes to some really fundamentally deep parts about the way we are oriented in the world. And another false assumption that has been made in enlightened rational thinking is that there is an objective outside reality that we perceive, and maybe we perceive it through our own subjective filters and what have you, but we are perceiving some aspect of that objective reality. But in reality, what I think the way that we properly orient ourselves is to understand that perception is itself and oriented through our motivations, our goals. The way we conceptualize the universe actually is the way that we perceive that universe. And so we tend to see things as utility, as this is the tool for doing this. This is an obstacle for this. And the question then is, what utility functions are built into the AI, programmed or whatever, spontaneously formed or what have you? And where do we come into that in this artificial intelligence's perception
useless
of the universe?
Ugly bags of water.
Exactly. Are we ends in ourselves, or are we means towards an end? And what end? Whose end? These are the fundamental questions, right? It isn't just about some rational scientific process that plays out in the realm of objective reality. There is no such thing. There is really only the subjective reality of what we are orienting ourselves towards. And who gets to decide what the computers are orienting themselves towards?
You know, one thing to keep in mind, I just thought of, you know, your Lord and Savior, Elon Musk, when he put in the cameras in all of the cars to make them full self, FSD, I guess that's what that stands for, full self-driving. So full self-driving. Oh, they kissed a curb, messed up my rim. I mean, they're all, you know, going on about that now. But the idea that you have all of the technology embedded already, and then you turn it on later, you know. Everybody, you good? Y'all got it? You know, it's all good? No. It's free this month. Turn it on, whatever. Yeah. You do the same kind of thing when you get these androids in your home and all these billion robots out there just sitting there. And it's like iRobot. All of a sudden they download and boom. And you'd know there's going to be an update, add to, upgrade, customer service, kiss my butt, whatever thing. And it's going to be to wear and hack the any safety, whatever, the whatever is whatever. And it's going to be, you know, things are going to happen. I anticipate that.
Yep.
And how are we going to deal with that? What's our goal?
I guess, really, in order to insulate ourselves from that, we have to be as detached from that technological infrastructure that's being woven around us. But even to the extent that we are able to insulate ourselves to that, and we are the people eating bugs and drinking rainwater out in the forest that you can't touch me, we're still surrounded in a web of people who are embedded in this technology and who will be subject to whatever upgrades that come along the wires. And that's another thing that, you know, keeps me up at night at times, is thinking about the, as you say, the, when you start, when you're watching a broadcast of Hillary Clinton and you start thinking, hey, you know, actually, maybe she's got a point. You know, what kind of,
she's so hot right now,
who knows, brain manipulation technologies and other things will be on the horizon. All I know is we won't know about it till it's already being used on us.
Yes, that's it. We won't know until it's too freaking late, you know, so you better do good now. You know, it's just, yeah, you know, I know you got to go, but, you know, this has been, you know, to be more enlightening for me today, you could answer me a couple of questions before you go. Got a couple of minutes.
I'll do my best.
Do you think toxic masculinity, one, is on its way back? Is that going to be a marketing thing? Are they going to yin and yang? It's like a yo-yo going back and forth. How long before you think, I'm pretty sure that's common, but I mean, how long do you think before they're going to, you know, masculine everybody up and go join the army or something?
Yep. How long? I can't say, but it, I could definitely see that that is the obvious reaction to the action that they put in motion for the past few decades. As you say, it's the pendulum swing. It's not only perfectly predictable, but I am sure perfectly predicted, and part, no doubt, of the ultimate orienting of society towards the coming war that we're going to get all ramped up about, and I've already started to see happening. Oh my God, those Chinese. The Chinese are behind everything. We have to kill them. And, we can't do that with a bunch of girly men, so we're gonna get, and no doubt the pendulum will swing back the other way. And
what do you think of
the manly men will stick up for human freedom?
What do you think, Iran?
Chinese people.
Iran.
Yeah, or Iran. Or
No. I mean, Iran, they bombed them and, you know, screw you, USA, and we're going to whatever and so on, that they did that.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? What did you go, whoa, that was balls? I mean, what were you thinking?
Right. So I just recorded New World Next Week where we talk about this. But basically, my long and short of it is this, at the very best possible reading, this is the way for people to, for everyone to save face. The Iranians have given everyone an ability to save face and say, look, okay, so we told you ahead of time we're going to do this thing. You all got prepared for it. You shot down 99.9% of the missiles or whatever. We save a face with our people. Look, we responded with force, and you get to save face. Hey, look, we've got this wonderful defense system, and everyone can just walk away from this. So there is the possibility that this won't escalate, and that, I think, is the best possibility that we could hope for. Whether or not people will take that, I mean, I guess it depends on whether or not the people who finance every war want to bring us into another.
Do you think that whole thing, that entire scenario, all right, you're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do it, and everybody make nice, you know, that wasn't all organized before?
Either way, it's the same result. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what level of coordination that takes or doesn't take, but it ends up in the same place.
We'll get missiles out of Turkey.
Right, yeah, right.
You know.
Speaking of Cold Wars, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm, so likelihood we're going to have a escalation in war, even if it's not Iran. I mean, are you seeing that?
Oh,
are we going to get a mushroom
cloud? It's coming in the course of this decade, I think. I have to pull out my crystal ball, I'm thinking we're definitely heading back into times where Americans and other spoiled Westerners who haven't seen that kind of military combat in their lifetime are going to see it playing out. And
with a mushroom cloud. I just want to know, is there going to be a mushroom cloud?
You know, it could take different forms, but yes, something equivalent of that. See, we're talking in World War II narratives about mushroom clouds and what have you. No, this is World War III, so it might be the mushroom cloud might be a drone swarm or whatever that assassinates everyone in Congress, you know, over in the blink of an eye, or whatever it is. Who knows?
Wow, somebody's out there screaming if wanting to know if they need a map. That wouldn't be me. I wouldn't do that.
No. No, but there was even that video they made several years about.
Slaughterbots.
Slaughterbots. Yeah.
Slaughterbots. I remember that. Well, thanks, James. There's a lot going on, you know, and a lot of perspective. Talking to a lot of people, I'm seeing a shift, and it's a big shift. And James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, the documentary's there. Go to opensourceeducation.online has package there of gives you great content. opensourceeducation.online, and it gives you a great package of context so you understand what's happening. That's why it's so important. Thanks a lot, James. I'll see you next time. Peace.
Absolutely.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.